All right, good morning, everyone. Hi, I'm Seth Pazinski with the Office of the National Coordinator for Health IT. I'll be serving as the designated federal officer for today's call on behalf of Wendy Noboa. I want to welcome everybody to the Interoperability Standards Workgroup for 2024. Thanks, everybody, for joining and agreeing to be volunteering to be a part of the workgroup. So just a reminder that all workgroup meetings are open to the public, and public feedback is welcome during the call. For members of the public that are joining, you can type your comments in the Zoom chat feature throughout the meeting, or there will be time at the end of the agenda if you want to make verbal comments. So welcome you to participate through the chat during the meeting or through verbal comments at the end. So we're going to start off with roll call of our workgroup members. So when I say your name, if you could just indicate that you are present. Sarah DeSilvi?
Here.
Steve Eichner?
Present. Good morning.
Morning. Pooja Babra?
Good morning.
Ricky Bloomfield?
Good morning. I'm here.
Medell Briggs Melanson? Hans Butendijk.
Good morning.
Good morning. Keith Campbell.
Present.
Christina Caraballo.
Good morning.
Good morning. Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Raj Dash.
Good morning.
Derek DeYoung.
Good morning.
Lee Fleischer.
Good morning.
Raj Goodvarti.
Good morning.
I know Jim Jurgis sent us a note that he wasn't going to be able to make today's meeting. Stephen Lane.
Good morning. Present.
Thank you. Hung Liu.
Good morning.
Good morning. Anna McAllister. Katrina Miller Parrish.
Good morning.
Good morning. Aaron Neinstein. Ikeloma Ashunkatan.
Good morning.
Good morning. Rochelle Prosser.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mark Savage.
Hi, I'm here.
Thank you. Phil Sutherland.
Good morning.
Shelly Spiro.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Zeynep Sumer King.
Good morning.
Okay. And Naresh Sundar Rajwan.
Good morning.
Good morning. All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Is there anybody I missed? Hannah Galvin, thank you for joining. And let's see. So that completes our roll call. I wanted to make just a few points for your all awareness before handing it over to the co-chairs to get into our agenda for today. One, I just wanted to highlight that the results of your effort through the work group will take the form of a draft set of recommendations in a letter to the HITECH. And the HITECH will ultimately vote and come to a majority consensus decision on a set of recommendations that will go to the National Coordinator for Health IT. I also wanted to note, in addition to that, you are, as members of the public, are free to submit any individual comments via the on-deck system related to draft USCDI V5 as well. And then the second point I just wanted to highlight is there will be homework between the workgroup meetings. Often we'll ask for volunteers for a particular data class or data elements to kind of lead the discussion or open the discussion for workgroup members ask for a lead to kind of take the point, or a few folks to take the point in leading and opening the discussion at the workgroup meetings. So as you get in the overview from Al Taylor from ONC Today on draft USCDI V5, if there are particular elements that you're interested in and you know, would like to take the lead on getting the conversation going at an upcoming workgroup meeting, please feel free to reach out to myself, Seth Pazinski, or Wendy Noboa via email to let us know. And I will plug our emails in the chat so you guys have those. So with that, I wanted to thank everyone again. And now just please join me in welcoming Sarah and Steve for their opening remarks and getting us into our meeting.
Welcome, everybody. So I just wanted to take a moment to formally welcome all of the new folks here to the meeting. I was new here last year and new and co-chair last year. And I can testify it took me a little bit to get the hang of it, but then it was just an honor and privilege to work with this very esteemed group of people on something so fundamental to our practice. I'm a family nurse practitioner taking care of patients in rural Vermont. And it's my honor to, this year to be joined in my co-chair with the amazing Steve Eichner, who you have a balance now in your co-chairs between clinical practice, SDOH health equity stuff with my work. And then Steve, I will let you introduce yourself, but you don't need an introduction. So Steve is going to bring in the public health perspective that is so critical.
Steve? Thank you for those kind words. My name is Steve Eichner. I'm the health IT lead at the Texas Department of State Health Services. I've been working in public health for 17 or 18 years or so in history with technology long before that. I am so excited to have such a dynamic set of folks to work on reviewing the US CDI and providing feedback to ONC about how the US CDI and the terms can best be used to serve the healthcare community and the public health community as well. We've got some exciting opportunities ahead of us, and I'm excited to do it. For convenience's sake, when there are multiple Steves in the room, I tend to adopt the nickname Ike, I-K-E. So noting that we've got another, at least one Steve in the room, we'll go that path to make it as easy as possible. And we're excited for you all to be here.
Indeed. I think we're going to go over to formal introductions. So I think we go back to the next slide. Yes. Or is there a next slide? So this is an opportunity for us just to very briefly introduce ourselves. There's going to be a 30-minute timer. I spared some of my context for you all in my welcome so I can deliver it here as a template. All right, my name is Sarah DeSilvi. I am a rural family nurse practitioner. I also have the honor of being the director of terminology for the HL7 Fire Accelerator project called the Gravity Project, which has the charter developing data standards to address the social determinants of health. I wear an additional hat in working with Yale Core on CMS social determinants of health and health equity contracts. And that is my historic clinical practice in rural Vermont. Still is the at least half of what I do. So it keeps me honest, and I look forward to working with you. Ike, off to you.
And thank you again. My name is again Steve Eichner. I've been the health IT lead at the Department of State Health Services here in Texas for a number of years. I'm also actively involved in a variety of HL7 related activities. I also work across public health with a number of our professional organizations, including the Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists and the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. And I'm really excited to be here and doing some good work.
Pooja Babra.
Great. Hi, everyone. Pooja Babra. I'm the PBM and pharmacy practice lead for Point of Care Partners. We are a health IT strategy company. My focus is mainly on strategy work related to pharmacy. So I've been in the pharmacy industry for over 30 years now, was on this work group last year. So thank you for having me back, and was also on the pharmacy and emerging therapies task group as well. I tend to say I work in the intersection of strategy, policy, standards, and technology. So that's my main focus. So I'm excited to be here. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Stephen Lane. Hi.
Hello. I'm Stephen Lane. I'm a practicing family physician and clinical informaticist. I serve as the chief medical officer at Health Gorilla, one of the QHINs on the TEFCA, and have been involved in this work group since its inception many years ago.
Ricky Bloomfield.
Hi, good morning. It's great to be back. I'm a physician, internal medicine, pediatrics, and a clinical informatician. I have been leading the clinical and health informatics work on the health software team at Apple for over 7 years and have been working on fire-related projects for over 10. I represent Apple to the Argonaut Project and the Karen Alliance and work closely with our government affairs team on policy-related issues. Really excited to be a part of the group again.
Thank you. Hung Lu?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am an associate professor of pathology at UT Southwestern Medical Center, and I also serve as a director of clinical pathology at Children's Health, a pediatric healthcare system in North Texas. I've had the honor of working on laboratory interoperability through the SHIELD initiative associated with the FDA, and I also received some salary support through several grants supporting laboratory interoperability. And I am also a member of the Clinical Advisory Committee, Council for Health Gorilla.
Thank you. I think Madel is not with us today. She needs an introduction. She's my esteemed co-chair on high tech, unless I'm wrong. And is Anna with us today? I do not see Anna in attendance. On to Hans.
Good morning. My name is Hans Buitendijk. I'm a senior director of interoperability strategy with Oracle. A couple of hats that I'm wearing. One is I'm very active in HL7 developing, participating in development of the standards that are supporting USCDI. Also active in EHRA that I'm using as a sounding board for working with EHR vendors that have to implement the standards. So that's most of where feedback and insights will be coming from. I will not list the different I will run out of time.
Katrina Miller Parrish, welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. So I am also a family physician and clinical informaticist working at Humana Insurance in payer operations and interoperability. In the past, I've worked in private practice and academic practice with EMRs all the way back to Vista. I'm director for clinical informatics currently. Previously, I was chair for quality and informatics at LA Care Health Plan, which is largely Medicaid plan, where I stood up the health information ecosystem, as we called it. And I've also served as the co-chair for the data and research committee for the Institute for Medicaid Innovation.
Welcome so much. Keith Campbell, is he with us today? I did not hear him in roll call. I don't think he's with us. Aaron Dienstein. Is Aaron with us today? I don't think so. Raise your hand if I say your name and I don't see you. I'm trying to scroll. Christina.
Hi, everyone. I'm Christina Caraballo. I'm Vice President of Informatics at HIMSS. Another role I play is I'm the President of IHG USA and sit on the board of IHG International. I've also been a member of this work group since the start, I think with one gap year, and was the former co-chair. Thanks.
Welcome, Christina. I'm going to circle back to Keith.
Yes, good morning. Apologies. My background is in internal medicine, and I also have a background in informatics and computer science. I'm the director of the SHIELD program at the Food and Drug Administration, and also have had a long history of working in standards, including HL7 and many aspects of data representation and interoperability. Thank you.
Welcome, Keith. Kikalomo.
Good morning. You guys feel free to call me Dio. Don't let the length of the name scare you. Go by Dio. A little bit about me. I'm boarded in internal medicine. I work as a hospitalist at a level one trauma center here in Charlotte. I have extensive expertise in both the payer and provider sector, working as a medical director at Anthem, now called Elevance Health, in which I had a leadership role there during the pandemic, spearheading a multidisciplinary COVID program and leveraging impactful data analytics during that time. After which I did pivot to my most recent role as a chief medical officer at Pegasystems, where I served as the highest clinical executive in the organization, representing Pega's clinical solutions to health systems, health payers, and life sciences to help optimize their health care outcomes, as well as their provider experiences. So that's a little bit about me. Nice to meet you all, and I look forward to collaborating with you.
Welcome. I do see that we've had some members join us. I'm going to save those intros to the end just to keep going, and then I'll do everyone who's joined and set at the end. Grace?
Good morning, everyone. Grace Cordovano, board-certified patient advocate specializing in the oncology space. My day-to-day is working with patients and families from point of diagnosis through survivorship or end-of-life care planning. I like to think I work at the intersection of real-world interoperability while reducing patient administrative burden, working at catastrophic life or death situations. I've had the privilege of serving on the Interoperability Standards Work Group, the USCDI Task Force. I'm an advisor to CancerX, and I'm absolutely thrilled to be here.
We are thrilled to have you. Rochelle?
Hi, good morning. My name is Rochelle Prosser. I'm the founder of Orchid Healthcare Solutions. I'm a registered nurse and a data scientist. I'm also a founding member of CancerX and an advocate, a staunch advocate for cancer patients. And Grace is a personal friend. I'm so happy to see her here. Just to keep it short, it's a 30-year history of nursing and caring for cancer patients and being that, trying to be in that space from payers to value-based care. So I'll just leave it at that. There's so much more and other people to talk to.
Luckily, we have a whole charge, a whole set of months we can get to know each other. Raj.
Hello, good morning. I'm a pathologist at Duke Health in Durham, North Carolina. I'm the CAP. I've served in a number of informatics, information technology related committees over the past few decades, focused on standards, and I currently chair the Artificial Intelligence Committee. Thank you.
Mark.
Good morning. I work on a variety of projects on health equity, patient access and PGHD, social drivers of health, interoperability, and so forth. And probably the other one other thing to highlight is that I am working with others on California's digital exchange framework, which is combining not just the usual ecosystem, but also community-based organizations and social service organizations across California exchanging USCDI V2. So it'll be a great pilot, nationwide pilot. Thanks.
Derek DeYoung.
Morning, everyone. I work in research and development at Epic out here in Verona, primarily in the interoperability space. I focus on payer and provider interoperability with an application we call Payer Platform. It's good to see Humana and Elevance on. I work closely with both of your teams in that area, with the goal of, in that work, of course, of reducing administrative burden, improving clinical care by combining knowledge sources together, and then, of course, making sure the patient has better access to data as well. I've participated in the TEFCA work group for payment and operations, and then we participate heavily in the DaVinci work groups, the HL7 DaVinci accelerator as well. Happy to be here.
Great to have you. Phil, is Phil with us today?
I am here. Good morning, everyone. Hi, Sarah. Phil Sutherland, Director of Health at Yardi Systems. We're an electronic health record in the long-term post-acute care space. I head up our electronic health record development and interoperability initiatives, software development background, and previously ran a startup, one of the first technology startups in the long-term post-acute care space. Good to be here.
Good to have you. Lee.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. I'm a professor emeritus, former chair and practicing anesthesiologist at Penn Medicine. I'm also a health services researcher. Probably most relevant, I was the previous chief medical officer and director of the Center for Clinical Standard and Quality, where we used a lot of the USCDI and thinking through this for a quality measurement, member of the NAM working groups on the high tech. And I have a advising firm called Rubrum Advising. Thank you.
Thank you. Shelley.
Good morning. I'm Shelley Spire. I'm the executive director of the Pharmacy HIT Collaborative,
which was a collaborative formed in 2010 by the National Pharmacy Professional Associations. I've been a pharmacist for 48 years in many different practice settings. I'm also an active member of the LTPAC HIT Collaborative, and for over, since its inception, 17 or 18 years, I am been a member of this task work group last year, and bring all aspects of pharmacy, very active in HL7 and NCPDP, and work on many different projects within both of those organizations.
Welcome, Shelley. Hannah.
Good morning. Apologies for the lack of camera this morning. I'm delighted to be here. I am the Chief Medical Information Officer for Cambridge Health Alliance, a public academic health system serving the Boston area. I am also the co-founder and board chair of SHIFT, the Independent Healthcare Task Force for Equitable Interoperability, where we are working to mature standards and implementation guidance around data segmentation and granular consent. And we'll also be serving in the Sequoia, on the Sequoia Project's Privacy and Consent Work Group in that capacity as well. And I am delighted this is my first time on the Interoperability Standards Work Group this year. So looking forward to it.
Vanip?
Good morning, and thanks for having me. I'm the current Vice President for Regulatory Affairs and Global Services at New York Presbyterian Hospital, which is a large health system in the New York City region. Before that, just about a year ago, I spent a long time at the Greater New York Hospital Association covering a number of different policy and regulatory issues, but really focusing a lot on health information technology and interoperability on behalf of the 200 plus hospital members of Greater New York. Spent a lot of time on the policy committee of the Statewide Health Information Network for New York, and really look for ways in which to apply USCDI and other standards to the work, the practical work that our hospital system does. Happy to be here, first year on the committee.
Welcome. Rajesh?
Hey, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity. I'm very delighted to be part of this group. Coming from MCG Health, evidence-based clinical decision support company, and my primary role over the last few years is on the interoperability and automation, especially in HL7 Devonshire groups and prior auth. And I've been part of many other committees developing interoperability standards, and then also a VD board member and a few other committees. Thank you.
Thank you. Naresh.
Hey, everyone. Good morning again. And this is Naresh. Apologies for no camera today. My background is in clinical informatics, and then I've actually also gotten into computer science intensively. I currently serve as Chief Data Officer for Sync Health, which is a statewide health information exchange for the state of Nebraska and state of Iowa. We build products and tools that closely ties with interoperability and practice the USCDI on a daily basis. So everything that happens here changes operationally for us. So really excited to be part of this panel.
We know Jim is not here today, so I'm now going to go to make sure that we allow Madel and then Anna. Madel, hi.
Good morning, everyone. I am traveling here in Los Angeles traffic, so I definitely can't be on camera. My name is Madel Briggs-Melanson. I'm the Chief for Health Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion for the UCLA Health System. I'm also an Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine at the David Geffen School of Medicine, where I still practice in the emergency department every single week. In addition to that, I'm the founder and CEO of Contour Health Solutions, which is a national advisory forum for health technology companies, as well as investors, on how to develop and implement inclusive technologies that actually improve the overall health status and high performance, especially of divested communities. The last thing is that I do serve very proudly as the co-chair of HITECH as well. And this is my first time here on the interoperabilities workforce, although, of course, this tends to be a very important stream of work throughout all the things that we do throughout the country. So it's a pleasure to be here today.
Welcome, Madel. Anna.
Hi, everybody. Anna McAllister.
I am beginning my second year serving on HITECH. Prior to that, I'd been involved in different work groups over the years with the ONC in various capacities, but this is my second year in HITECH. I have a diverse background in public affairs, economic policy, foreign policy, but about 12 years ago, switched gears as a frustrated patient with type 1 diabetes. I decided that real world evidence offered an important option to randomized controlled trials for those of us who live with complex illness. And I co-founded a company to do big data analytics. We did a lot of stuff in cancer and other disease areas, identifying new outcomes measures. Through that, I got involved in health IT policy and public affairs. I worked with the Scripps Research Translational Institute, was one of the original co-PIs for the All of Us program. I did a second startup focused on building a platform for crowdsourcing the design of clinical research, which was part of the All of Us program grant. I've served on a number of FDA advisory committees as a type 1 diabetes patient, both drugs and devices, and patient engagement as a consultant. And I have also served for about 12 years on national quality forum committees, looking at CMS quality measures in the endocrine and diabetes chronic disease space. I helped start a patient hacker movement in the type 1 diabetes space called We Are Not Waiting Movement, which was designed to take the tools that we had in informatics and devices and put them together at a rate that was faster and more effective than what was happening in industry. And for the past 6 years, I've worked as an independent consultant focused mostly on engaging patients and issues related to data, data use, access, and governance, mostly with the goal of doing data governance for companies and groups in a way that earns the trust of patients. I'm a new member of the board of directors for Sequoia, and I'm also leading and co-chairing a new work group that will be formed that we're forming with Sequoia on consumer engagement strategy. So, identifying ways to effectively engage consumers and patients directly with companies to encourage interoperability and effectively engage, enable patients to use their data in ways that they want it to be used. Happy to be here.
Anna, we're happy to have you. I am sure all of you feel the collective wisdom and experience of this group. It is a really robust and wonderful work group this year, and we're very much excited for this work. Ike, any other thoughts before we pivot? You might be on mute. I think we can go to the next slide because we do have another topic of conversation. Ike, are you coming off mic?
We're good, thanks.
Okay, great. Okay, next slide. Ike, would you like to handle this or should I? Would you want me to lead it?
Go for it.
Okay. as I made it last, I was going to, Sarah, this will be on repeat from last year. It is my honor to present on our ISWG workgroup charge for the year. Specifically just giving insight as a new member to HITECH and a new member to ISWG last year and brand new co-chair, I have some tips and tricks at the end. So the overarching charge of the ISWG is to review and provide recommendations on the current year's draft of USCDI, which this year is draft USCDI version 5, which we know came out right before our last HITECH meeting a little bit ago for those of you who are on HITECH. It is released and available on hit.gov. Specifically, we are all asked to take our wisdom and expertise and perspectives in consideration of draft USCDI and provide recommendations on the following elements. Any new data class and element from draft USCDI that should be considered for the final USCDI V5 release. And then we're also asked to consider any existing level 2 data classes and elements that were not included in USCDI V5 that should be considered for the final USCDI V5 release. As Seth mentioned, this is kind of an abstract statement, but as Seth mentioned early on, all of this, all of our wisdom and all of our recommendations and elements in A and B become part of a final transmittal letter to HITECH in April. That final transmittal letter is from last year is a really good resource to review as you're trying to figure out how to take this charge and apply it specifically, because you can see how we all work together to create comments, opportunities, perspectives, amendments to USCDI and a reflection of level two elements to present to HITECH as a final version. Again, this is very speedy, very concrete work, and all of your expertise will be applied to the task. And we're very, very excited to have you. And ONC is going to walk us through some of the particulars of this over the course of the next slides. Ike, anything to add?
No, I think you did a great job.
Oh, thanks. One of the great things about this work group is that it really is an opportunity for all of us to talk in depth from all of our different perspectives. And again, really honored to co-lead this with a public health expert, given a health equity perspective of my own, knowing that it's very, very critical. Next slide. Now I am passing the mic to my colleague, Al, I believe, who will be presenting on the draft USCDI version 5, the primary document that it's our responsibility and charge to provide insight on in order to present that back to HITECH. Al?
Thank you, Sarah, and thank you, Steve, and to the rest of the work group. I'm happy to present a recently released draft USCDI version 5. Next slide. We're gonna go over what USCDI in general, talk about the new data elements, the new data classes that we added to draft V5, proposed to be added to the final. And then we will talk about the other changes that we included in draft V5, and then look at the timeline for sort of where we go from here once now that we released it. Next slide, please. USCDI, as almost everybody knows, is ONC's defined core set of data for both patient care and patient access and exchange of data using Health IT, using the technology that we have all been working to build. It also establishes a baseline as a reference for other purposes besides exchange of data using Health IT. And it expands over time using a well-defined, predictable, transparent, collaborative process. And it's from the public input that we get ideas for new data elements in USCDI for the next version. Next slide, please. USCDI was established in the ONC Cures Act final rule in 2020. And it replaced the common clinical data set, which was a similar set of data that was used for exchange in certified health IT. Recently released HTI1 or Health Data Technology and Interoperability provided certification program updates, which included establishing USCDI version 3 as the new baseline for exchange under these criteria that I'm about to talk about. The compliance date, certified technology must be updated by January 1st of 2026 in order to continue to be certified. For version 3, USCDI version 3, which is the new baseline, is the data set that's referenced in these five ONC certification criteria, just one note: we previously had referenced USCDI or part of USCDI in the electronic case reporting. That's been removed, and the reference is only to a specific implementation guide and not to USCDI. There's other uses. I mentioned that USCDI is a baseline for other purposes. We have we know of already several outside functions and outside authorities that use USCDI as a reference for as the exchange set. That includes at least two CMS programs, patient access and payer-to-payer APIs. TEFCA uses USCDI version 1 currently as the baseline for exchange in several elements of TEFCA. Also the California Data Exchange Framework references USCDI V2 as the required data set. Next slide. The CARES Act final rule establishes the SFAP, or the Standards Version Advancement Process, which allows health IT developers to voluntarily update the programs or their products to newer versions and then provide that to their customers. As of USCDI version 2 was available through SFAP until December of last year, when USCDI version 3 became the only available version of USCDI that can be SVAP'd. There are some, not a lot, but some vendors, some developers had already updated to USCDI version 2 before the end of that availability. That information, if you're interested in keeping track of it, can be found on the Certified Health IT Product List that ONC hosts. And there is a special special section of the chapel that can update people on who's already updated to version 2 or version 3 when developers start doing that. In addition to USCDI version 2, US Core 5.0.1 and CCDA R2.1 release 3, which support USCDI version 2, it actually sort of enables or implements version 2, are also available through SFAP, and the developers who updated to version 2 also updated to these two implementation guides. So they're capable of exchanging USCDI V2. Next slide. Next slide. So I wanted to highlight this because for new submissions, we get a lot of submissions through our OnDeck system or our ONC new data element and class submission system. And it's important for submitters to understand how we would likely evaluate their submissions. Based on a number of different criteria, including the technical maturity of the standards, their use and exchange, along with a really important aspect, which is the breadth of applicability. A data element that is very narrowly focused on a specific specialty is considered obviously less applicable, and therefore gets a lower, some would consider a lower level. Level 0, and we had a lot of submissions that fell into that category. It doesn't mean that they're not technically mature. It just means that they only apply to a narrower use case. And since USCDI is the US core, not considered to be a viable candidate at this time for a future version of USCDI. Next slide. During the V5 process, we received 62 submissions through OnDeck, which is about half of what we received in prior years. We'd like to think that we're getting close to getting it right, but we also recognize that there may have just been more focus on other things like our proposed rule, or now our new final rule with HTI1. So we received these submissions in these data classes. Next slide. We also received over 300 comments on previously submitted data elements in these categories. We take all of the submissions and all of the comments on prior previously submitted data elements and come up with a list. Next slide, please. These next two slides are all of the data elements that were processed, evaluated, and determined to be level two, which is those most mature, most ready for implementation, and most broadly applicable. These two slides have, there's two things I wanted to point out. These are all the level two. This is the universe of data elements that we considered when we developed what goes into draft B5. And each year we publish a new version. This is the same universe of data elements that we consider for each time around. So new submissions, old submissions are all considered if they're considered to be level two. The highlighted data classes and elements are data elements that were adopted into, or not, sorry, not adopted, but added to draft B5, proposed to be added to the final version 5. The little H next to these are data elements that the HITACC have previously weighed in on in the last 2 years, especially. They have advocated for the addition of these data elements. Some of those are now part of draft B5, and some of them are still being considered. Next slide. This just goes over the second half of level two data elements and a little teaser about what I'm about to talk about. So we'll go to the next slide. Once we take the entire universe of level two, we apply some additional prioritization criteria because there's simply too many data elements to add to a particular version, even if they are all equally applicable. So we have to apply some further filtering. We prioritize two sort of categories. One is the technical feasibility of addition, minimizing the amount of burden that IT developers have to go through, the providers that have to implement the data elements, and also even first, the standards developers like the US Core and the CCDA IG developers also have to implement new elements in US CDI. So all of them count, all of those are considered. In addition to some policy priorities that we set around healthcare disparities, serving underserved communities, behavioral health, and public health reporting. Overall, once we have evaluated all those, we take all of them in total and assess whether or not the group, the package of new data elements are feasible to implement. And that's what we mean by aggregate lift for all the data elements included in a particular version. Next slide. So here we go. This process that we've been using developed, we have added 13 new data elements to draft B5. The icons here note these, the prioritization criteria that we used that sort of apply to the data elements. There's the little squiggly line, or that's a section symbol, it turns out. That indicates that there are aspects of ONC certification regulation that were used as partial justification for adding these data elements, since IT is already required or will be required to use, at least collect these data elements. We felt it reasonable to add it to the next version. So these new data classes, observations and orders, along with the other data elements, we're going to get into some details about these as well. Next slide. So this is the whole US CDI version 5. It's a lot to digest in one slide. I'm not going to take the time to read through it, but the highlighted classes and elements are new to draft V5. Next slide. Now I'm going to just get into a little bit of detail, as far as the data elements, 13 data elements that we added Next slide, please. The first one is we added two new clinical notes. One is emergency department note, and the other is operative note. Both of these were advocated for by the HITACH in two previous years, in the last 2 years. We set the minimum, low ink code is used to identify the content in emergency department note and operative note. And we have set the minimum low ink code for one particular code representing emergency department note and op note. But it doesn't mean that other coded concepts or other coded note types or narratives can be included in the exchange of information. Next slide. The next one is lot number. This is the first additional data element beyond immunizations that we added to the CDI. Lot number, as you know, is important for vaccine safety. It's used in the VAERS program. It's used to identify recall in the event of adverse events associated with vaccines. Next slide. In laboratory data class, we added an additional data element test kit unique identifier, also advocated for by the HITACH in previous years. The test kit unique identifier is important to identify differences in labs based on method, and this part of the lab method that uses a test kit, a unique test kit. It's important to help in interpretation because different test kits may result in different results in different reference ranges. So this is used to identify where that might be important. It also uses, we established the applicable vocabulary standard of the FDA UDI system, which is the same as we use for implantable devices. We think that it's a solid standard for test kits, which as of 2022 have to bear an FDA UDI. Next slide. The medications, probably long overdue, is medication route. And this was actually originally submitted as a combination of dose and route 2 years ago, actually. And we split it and added dose, but did not add route last year. And we've come around to add route to really help enrich the amount of data that's available for all medications. Next slide. The observations data class is new and includes two different quite different data elements. One is advanced directive observation, which is, I think about it as metadata about advanced directives. And this is things like, does a patient have an advanced directive? Where is it located? Has it been validated? What are some of the components of what are some of the components, or what type of advanced directive is it? It's not the advanced directive document itself, because those change, those are different by every jurisdiction. But it only is information about it, and this complements the components of advanced directive that we added last year with treatment intervention preference and care experience preference. And the next observation that we added is sex parameter for clinical use, which is a data element that adds context to a variety of different tests, procedures, diagnostic imaging studies that have some differences in their results based on being a male or female anatomically. And so this is added this is a data element that can be used to across multiple different data classes. So it can be used to supplement a laboratory test. It can be used to supplement a diagnostic imaging test, or many other things, to many other data elements that can be used. So it's used across data classes, which is one of the things that we highlight for some data elements, is that they can be reused for multiple different purposes. And next slide. And orders, we added the orders data class and the single data element orders. The orders is meant to represent the act or the intent of a provider to get something done during care. It doesn't specify what has to be in the orders. Is it an order for lab, an X-ray, a consult? It's only the container for the clinical content. But we felt like it was important to capture that part, because a provider's intent is sometimes one of the part of a quality measurement, and obviously patient provider intent is what drives the provision of healthcare. Next slide, please. And we added three new patient demographics and information data elements. The first one is interpreter needed, and this supplements or is a companion to the preferred language data element, and it's simply an indicator of a patient's need for translation services. This is important for not just provision of care locally, but also for care that's being requested outside, so that a proper interpreter services can be put in place so that appointments aren't canceled, consults aren't canceled, surgery's not canceled because there's not an appropriate interpreter available to the patient. And the other two are name to use and pronoun, which are important for providing culturally competent care to the LGBTQI community. And we added, but it is not only used for that purpose. Name to use can include things like nickname, formal name, preferred name, and not just in the context of care for a certain population. Next slide. And finally, we added two provenance data elements. The first is author, and the second is author role. The intent of these two data elements are to not only provide information about the source of data, something like a clinical note, who authored the clinical note, but also this can be used to indicate that the information is patient generated or the patient is the source. This is important to distinguish between a patient reported allergy, which may or may not be clinically valid, or a provider indicating that an allergy is an observed allergy or known history of a reaction. This is a new use case for author and author role that was not present, that we didn't really indicate when we first proposed to add author USCDI version 1 in our proposed rule. The reason that it was not added was because some commenters felt like it was of limited use outside of, say, documenting clinical note authorship, and that the infrastructure was not in place to readily implement this data element. And what one of the things that we're looking for is comments on whether or not things have changed sufficiently for this to be more reasonably, the burden of development and implementation is more reasonable this time around. Next slide. In addition to these data elements, we made a couple of changes to some other existing data elements that, you know, the V4 rather, and before, and I'm going to highlight some of them, but I'm not going to dig deep into every single one. Some of these are changes in definition, changes in examples, but not changing the scope of any of the data elements. Next slide. This is a summary. It's a lot of busy slide, but the key ones that I wanted to point to was encounter location. We added the HSLOC as the applicable vocabulary standard. used in multiple settings for multiple purposes, and it's also well established. This was not news to us when we added encounter location to version 3, but we didn't feel like it was solid enough, and now we think that it is, and we're looking for feedback on whether or not y'all think we're right. To proceed, we made two clarifications. One is with the CDT standard. We changed the way that we reference CDT for dental procedures because we felt like, and the commenters felt like CDT was perceived to only be useful in dental EHRs rather than to represent dental procedures, whether they're captured in a medical EHR or a dental EHR. And for immunization, we clarified detectable references to CBX and NDC, but made no differences. It did not change the applicable standards. We just clarified the naming of those standards. And the rest of them are just simply, I would call them minor changes to the definitions to improve clarity. A spelling change, but that's not, this is just cleanup. Some of these were just cleanup we review the definitions, examples, et cetera, yearly, and we felt like these changes were due. Next slide. So this is just the highlight of encounter location. Next slide. And this is how we changed the reference to CDT. We removed the reference to technology primarily designed to capture dental procedures and dropped it so that folks have a better understanding that CDT is useful in all EHRs and not just dental EHRs. Next slide. So this is a high-level overview of the process where we have developed USCDI through draft V5 and some highlights to the data elements that we added. This is driven by public input and also the public's response to our prioritization criteria, which we changed. We actually added to or clarified during the V3 cycle, where we added additional equity-based data elements to USCDI, and we've continued that. We'll continue to focus on particular areas around the prioritization criteria as we consider new data elements for V6. If we change the way that we prioritize data elements, we'll certainly announce that and clarify that we're looking to go in a particular direction or focus on a particular thing this time around. We will continue to do that into the next cycle. Next slide. Just want to touch on next slide. Touch on the timeline from here. USCDI is a cycle. It's a repeating cycle. It's on an annual basis. And at any given time, we're working on, two or more different versions of USCDI. We recently published draft V5. We're in the public comment period now. Once the public comment period is over, we'll sort through all of the comments. We'll sort through the high-tech recommendations letter and see what changes we need to make to draft V5, add, subtract, or maintain the data elements in draft V5, and then publish. We expect to publish V5, the final version, in July. And then the cycle continues. That's when we announce the open period for the V6 submission cycle. And then we will go through it again. Next slide. This is just a text version of the previous slide, but pinning particular dates on. And we already covered that. The highlight for this group and for everybody else, the deadline for comments and public feedback is April 15th, which is a Monday at midnight. That corresponds with the end of the HITECH, the April HITECH meeting, which is where this group's recommendations will be heard and hopefully approved by the HITECH at that time. And then that recommendations letter will be sent to the national coordinator for consideration. Those recommendations will be considered for the draft B5 cycle, but also for future cycles. We have in the past, as I talked about when I looked and when I showed you the new data elements and also the level 2 data elements, we may take action on a HITECH recommendation this year, might take action on a recommendation in following years. So it doesn't go away, the comments don't go away, the input doesn't go away. And I want to say that might be my last slide, but let me take a look at the next slide. In addition, we wanted to add some specific questions that we don't just say, hey, what do you think? We want to know what the public feels about all of the new data elements that we added to USCDI. Are they the right ones? Are the definitions right? Usage notes, examples, applicable standards, are they all what others feel are the best for these data elements? Are there level 2 data elements that I covered, that I showed, that should also be considered for addition? And then if there are data elements on the in draft E5, the new data elements in draft E5, that would pose significant barriers to development or use of the, we want to hear that as well. We have changed things in draft from a draft version to a final version based on this input. We expect these comments to have a significant impact on draft V5. We also asked specific questions about three or four data elements, I guess. One is in the provenance data class, the author and author role. Is this a reasonably implementable set of data elements? Has there been progress in the ability to capture and exchange author and author role over the last 4 years since it was initially recommended or proposed to be added to V1. For lot number, should the lot number be more generically available? Medications have lot numbers. Other things have lot numbers. And so should lot number be more broadly applicable than just immunizations? And finally, test kit unique identifier. This is a specific specific UDI or specific device identifier that we added that is specific to lab. It's what we're looking for is input on in all of the areas that this data element would be useful to improve lab data interoperability, and what's the current experience of health IT developers in capturing, using, and exchanging this data element. These are some specific data element focused questions that we have for the public, and we hope that this group will also consider these specific questions in their deliberations for this set of recommendations. Next slide. That is it. We can open it up for discussion. Sarah, Steve, however you want to handle this. There's a lot of chat questions. Yes. I'm assuming that there's some questions that we may or may not be able to answer or may have already answered, and I'll do my best.
I'm going to try to
see. So however you want to handle the Q&A session.
I'm going to try to, I time-stamped some of the questions in the chat. I'm going to try to get to those, and then we can go through hands if that's okay. Just because I don't want to lose the comments that people put in the chat. I do want to state one thing before we go into this. There's already really amazing comments on content and perspective and definitions and meaning. And that is exactly what we're all here to do. So what I want to do is save those thoughts on missing patient perspective, clarifying definitions, uncertainty between different elements for the actual work of the ISWG, because that's what we're all here for. And the great thing is next meeting, we can like hit the ground running and really talk about process right now, because I want us all to understand the process of what has to happen next, if that's okay. And I'm writing everything down, but so there was a question at, which I think I'm going to go all the way back to 1043, which was from Anne McAllister. How are the prioritization criteria determined?
The prioritization, there's a couple different things that go into the prioritization criteria. One of them, this group actually in previous years had established some of the recognizing that when we ask for public input, we're going to get it, and we got a lot. And so we are going to get a lot of recommendations for new data elements. Even before USCDI came out, there was recognition that there may be too many for us to consider to be added. And so we developed the technical criteria that we talked about as far as developer burden, standards development burden, implementer burden, aggregate lift. Those are some concepts that we recognized immediately would be at the minimum set of issues that we would need to sort through to decide which data elements go in to into the next version. We also put on top of that, we added a layer of sort of policy priorities. These are sometimes administration priorities, HHS priorities, and sometimes ONC priorities. And that's how we came up with the focus on public health reporting, equity and disparities. And more recently, we added behavioral health to the mix to focus on data elements that were specific to behavioral health. And so over time, we have changed those prioritization criteria some. And if we were to consider, we would announce a change in priorities for next time. But for now, for the V6 cycle, but for now we are considering the ones that I just reviewed.
Thank you, Al. And then because this is a process question, again, we have plenty of time to get to the hands. So I'm just gonna try to review the ones in the chat. There's a question that we've heard, you know, I've gotten DMs about as well, regarding how you advance data elements up the levels. It goes back to that level conversation. Specifically, part of our charge is reviewing level 2 elements. But there's a question, besides comments, how do you promote inclusion of a level 2 data element into a version? And I suppose this is both from a public comment perspective and from an ISWD perspective. Al, do you want to take that one? And we can.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that ONC actively promotes inclusion. But what we do is we review, we look at the data elements, identify the ones that fit into the prioritization criteria, and give those sort of an extra look. And we have also sometimes worked with the community, the industry, example of the work that we did to sort of shape, to help shape the submissions by the Gravity Project on the SDOH data. We worked with them. They put together, a couple people on the call were there, and they created a submission that fit into the model and the priorities that we had set and were working with. And that's one of the ways that I guess you could say that's promoting inclusion, but we are, but in general, we review, it's kind of up to the submitter to submit a data element that sort of meets these criteria, these prioritization criteria. And when additional information is available, additional use cases, additional published IGs, test data on the data elements, even implementation experience, those can be used to upgrade year on year a data element from a previous level to level 2 for further consideration.
Thank you. And then what I want to just add a little nuance, because I'm trying to knit again, knitting things from the chat. One of the things else that hits upon that something that was being said in the chat that I just want to make very clear. Often things, it takes years and cycles of our work in ISWG of reviewing level two elements or pulling in experts such as gender harmony that was discussed in the chat and refining and redefining and adding nuance and clarity to existing level two elements. And then eventually they might or may make it up onto a USCDI version. I just want everyone to understand that when we pull in experts, we pulled in DI experts last year and some diagnostic imaging elements, laboratory experts, gender harmonies, SDOH experts, health equity experts. That was my first hello. And ISWG was coming in from an SDOH perspective. So that iterative work is part of how we elevate things as well within this work group. And then there's one very, other than that, many of the comments in the chat are like content expertise stuff that I do wanna just make sure we bring back to the conversation next time so we can address any process elements. There is a process question from Hans at 1101. If you can see that, Al, it is lengthy. If you go to 1101, we can address that. And then that was the last chat question regarding process before we get to Hans. He's reading.
It's not that long.
Yeah, this is a question. So yeah, I understand the question. It's a question that we've gotten before. The normal flow of USCDI is the standard set. US Corps and CCDA are the vehicles to exchange those. And necessarily their development has to follow a USCDI version. But we work closely with US Corps, we work the design teams beforehand and during the before we publish a version, before we publish a draft version, we meet with and discuss potential new data elements with the U.S. Corps team to estimate the feasibility of implementing a standard or making a new version of that standard, U.S. Corps or CCDA, to make sure that we think that the development burden is reasonable. And then we work with, once we publish a version, a draft version, then we work with, after we publish a final version, we participate in the design meetings, all of the design meetings, once we have a final version of USCDI, to develop those new updates to US Corps and CCDA. So it's not accidental, it's intentional that the US Corps and the CCDA IGs are developed in a way that meets ONC's intent as far as data exchange goes. And we've had that engagement has had a significant impact on what ends up being the balloted IGs that we just finished balloting. For version four,
USCDI version four. Al Seemeyer, thank you so much for sharing that. That's really useful. I think it would be helpful at a future meeting or a future work group meeting just to share a little bit of how those calendars generally align in terms of looking at what version of USCDI informs what version of US Corps and the like, just so that there's good understanding, not that there's anything. There's a problem with the approach that we're using, but so there's a clear understanding of the approach that we're using because there are a bunch of different timelines that are involved with SFAP and everything else, and really looking at kind of a timeline map to understand how everything really does align, I think would be really, really helpful.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. I'll just say that for those of you who've been involved with the IG process, there's because it's a consensus-based process, takes a lot of time. It takes it takes about 6 months to design the ballot, the balloted version of the IG, and then it takes another 4 to 6 months to reconcile the ballot. And so there's the general, and once that version is published, so now we have the 7.0.1 for US Corps, for example, that's being published. That'll be published after reconciliation of the ballot, which just closed. And then once that's available, once that's published and the CCDA IG is published, those three together will be considered for SVAP for next time. And so if those three for version four are added to the approved standards list, then they will be available for update to version four. So currently, version three is available by SVAP, but it's also available for update under the HTI rule as well. So it's a little bit confusing as far as how USCDI version three is used, but you know, we expect that version four will be available for SVAP in August, September of this year.
Thank you, Al. I do like Ike's idea of a visual. I think that would help some of us who are visual folk. I do want to see if we can get to the hands. We have a few more minutes. Mark, you've been very patient. Your question?
Thanks. So greatly appreciate data elements that were added to the draft V5. Want to raise a question about elements that HITACH recommended that were not added. And to get a little better understanding of why, I'd lift up, for example, care plan, which was a modest recommendation, not a full-fledged care plan, family health history, travel info, which is really important for public health, things like COVID and Zika. What strong recommendation, unanimous recommendation, can you help us understand why those don't get in? And maybe there's also a transparency issue here. It would be nice to hear more of an explanation about why, after all the work that the ISWG does, particular elements don't get in, but I understand today is not the day for going into all of that detail. Thanks.
Mark, what I can say about that is that we look at all of them and we can't pick all of them, and we can't pick even a significant fraction of them. That's something that, would be considered for future versions, especially as, as various highlights are brought to those data limits. We did not intentionally leave anything out. We only intentionally selected a modest handful of data elements to add. That's the about as simply as I can put it. It wasn't personal, Mark.
Thank you, Al. And then Anna, you've been very patient as well. You're on mute if you are trying to speak. Anna?
Hi there. In follow-up to the answer to the question that you pose on my behalf, Sarah, about what are the priorities and how the priorities determined. One of the things that I will raise here again, which I've raised before, and it's probably more of a HITACH issue than this work group issue, but I would love to see the impact of these data elements on patients be considered, specifically as it relates to patient burden. There's a long history and an understandable and appropriate history of considering physician burden and developer burden, but it seems to me like the point of this is to reduce the burden on patients, and the way that many of these rules get interpreted and ultimately translated can ultimately increase the burden on patients. ONC has been incredible over the years in considering patients and including those of us who speak from the patient perspective. So I don't want to be critical, but I would just like to continue raising the issue that there's a significant degree of health IT burden on patients, and I still have to serve as my own health information exchange and carry the data from one physician to the next, particularly as it relates to, you know, continuous glucose monitoring data, insulin pump data. None of that stuff is incorporated, and the need to have that along with all of my lab measures, blood pressure measures, et cetera, and to physically carry that in different formats to from one physician to another, and getting access to the clinical data in a way that is doesn't require, you know, so many different, you know, getting over so many different barriers around password resets and two-factor authentication, et cetera. Those are significant burdens. And over time, it adds, the cumulative effect can be somewhat overwhelming. And that's for somebody like me. So I think, again, ONC's been great in so many ways about including patients and considering the patient perspective, but we really need to expand our consideration of what is the burden that these data elements and requirements, or the lack of data elements and requirements, have on individuals and patients.
Thanks, Anna. There's, you kind of bring up two points, almost not quite two sides of the same coin, is the burden of adding them, adding data elements to USCDI on the patients, and the potentially the reduction of burden by adding them, because if they become more available because they're part of USCDI, part of the view, download, transmit package, adding them to USCDI might actually reduce the burden because it's easier to find, easier to get, easier to exchange. But I think that your point about either burden or benefit to the patient is a really significant use case that we would love to hear more from, and we would expect to hear more from patient advocacy groups like the ones you represent. So we definitely want to hear about patient burden and how adding a data element or a particular data element increases the burden versus decreases it potentially.
Thank you, Anna and Al. And thank you, everybody, for a really robust discussion. We are going to have a very fun time this year, I promise. It is good work and important work. I believe we're segueing to public comment, and then we will close out shortly.
All right. Hi, everyone, again. As Sarah said, we're going to move into our public comment segment. So if you'd like to make a public comment, please use the raise hand feature, which is located on the Zoom toolbar at the bottom of your screen. If you're participating by phone only today, you can press *9 to raise your hand. And then once called upon, press *6 to mute and unmute your line. So we'll give folks a minute to queue up to see if we have any public comments. Okay, not seeing any public comments queued up, and I'm not seeing any in the any raised hands in the Zoom. So, Sarah and Stephen, I'll send it back to you to go over our workgroup plans. And sorry, go ahead, Al.
Oh, I guess there was a question that I wanted to, were we going to go over the spreadsheet? Hans just asked a question about it, but I wasn't sure if we were going to go over the spreadsheet as far as how we gather recommendations and thoughts from the work group. I have that queued up if that's in the cards.
Yeah, that sounds great. Let me hand it back to Sarah and Steve to see, just to go over work group plans coming up, and then we can go over the Google Doc.
Thanks, Ed. Steve Weitner. Well, we provided a good overview today. Thank you so much to Al for giving us the overview of the draft. We do have a general plan together, so we'll be meeting together weekly over the next several months going through April 9th. We've got to provide we will be providing an update to HITECH at their next meeting. As Seth and Al mentioned, we will be using a Google worksheet to help us develop our initial set of comments and then eventually transition into a shared document as we prepare our final draft as we move forward. Sarah?
Thank you so much, Mike. And then, it's a tight timeline. Luckily, we have a set number of elements. And then I believe we do want to pivot just to a view of how we do the actual labor of the work. I don't know if there's a next slide for it. If we go to the next slide. We did plan on, okay. Yes, we did. That means Al's about to take over. The work that we do both happens in this meeting and asynchronously, and it's done through a shared Google document that contains all of the draft V5 elements and any level 2 elements that we want to elevate and place on the Google Drive for review. This then becomes the working draft of our final transmittal letter. Al, and you, this is the first view. We'll go far deeper into it next week, I promise. Al?
Thanks. On screen, this is a look. This is basically the same spreadsheet we had last year, and I just wanted to orient you to it. I pre-populated this spreadsheet with the data elements that are new to draft V5, including because we're looking for comments on all of these categories, data element name, definition, standards, we pre-populated that for people to review and comment. Also available on the draft V5 website and also the draft V5 standards document, which is also on the website. Only these 13 are added on this page. Whether the work group recommends anything on any of these data elements is entirely up to the work group. But we will gather some thoughts and gather the discussion over the course of these meetings. And also, in addition to the 13 new ones, I also there's a tab for all of the data elements in draft V5, including, but it doesn't indicate the ones. It does indicate the ones that were added added in draft V5, but it includes all of the content. So we can accept comments on any of the data elements in draft V5, but mostly focusing on the new data elements. And that's all I had to talk about the spreadsheet. This will be included in the homework email for people to start looking at it and start entering comments and discussion.
Al, can you just answer Al's question? As many others will have it, where we're putting like working general comments for, you know, kind of the working element. There you go. Thanks.
So the member recommendations is where they can be. This can be well-formed thought, or it can be musings in the member recommendation. If we talk about it. You know, we'll capture our discussion in column L, and then further information on the recommendation. Actually, the concise recommendation should go in column J, and the sort of the discussion, the members' input as far as why the recommendation makes sense should be entered in K. And then we'll go through and process and see what we want to, we'll start forming actual recommendations and populate column L.
As people are making, this is a shared worksheet so that everybody has simultaneous, or all work group members have simultaneous access to the worksheet. So one of the things we do ask is, as you are making comments in the columns, please identify yourself, you know, first name, last initial or other sufficient information that all users can understand who is making the comments. So that if there's a need to go back for further information, we've got some information about who to go back through, who to go back to. As we look at our meeting schedule, one of the things that we will be doing is some deeper dives into particular elements and looking both to work group members and additional individuals to provide additional information or new information about the related data elements to help inform our conversation. If there are particular data elements that you're interested in particularly in speaking to or sharing detailed opinions on as a presenter, we would love to hear from you. If there are elements that you want additional information in and a deeper dive, please let us know. If you have a recommendation about someone who's not a member of the work group who can speak to any particular issue, we would love to hear that as well to help inform and make sure that we're using our meeting time well and that the work group has as much information as is possible to inform our discussion.
I believe we are at time, and I want to just have everyone rest assured, I was new last year, and I promise you'll get the hang of it. It is a lot, but you're surrounded by people that care deeply about ensuring your expertise is laid to bear, and we will see you next week. It's going to be a fun time. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next week.
Rock and roll.
Great job, co-chairs.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.